Well, there's a definition for a serial killer. It says that someone, an individual who has murdered 2 to 3 or more people over a period of more than a month, with some downtime, a cooling off period between the murders, and whose motivation for killing is largely based on psychological gratification. Now, what does go through the minds, the dark minds of such notorious killers that you have heard of? Ted Bundy, Jeffrey Dahmer, David Berkowitz, Son of Sam, John Wayne Gacy, Dennis Rader, the BTK killer, and others. In a moment, we'll be talking with Tom Philbin, iMonster, on Coast to Coast AM. And let me tell you a little bit about Tom Philbin, freelance writer. He has authored more than 40 books, including true crime, nonfiction, and crime novels. Among his many publications are the novel A Matter of Degree and his nonfiction Murder USA and the Killer Book of Crime. He has also published numerous articles in a wide variety of magazines, including Reader's Digest, Parade, Woman's Day, his work that we're talking about tonight, iMonster, Tom Philbin on Coast to Coast. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program.
Thanks, George. My pleasure to be here.
How did you get interested in the mind of a serial killer?
Well, it all came down finally to psychological stuff, and it really all started with me because I was not raised in what we say, Ozzy and Harry in a sitcom environment, you know.
And I,
no, not at all. And, what happened to me was I tried to kind of build an image of myself. And this included, like, for example, going into the paratroopers and all this kind of stuff to build up who I thought I really was and kind of make me feel good about myself. And one of the things when I got a little older was to look at stuff, and I know we're not going to cover all the gruesome details tonight, but I mean, to look at stuff that's really the worst of the worst,
mm-hmm.
and serial killers was the that. It was just kind of a thing to me to achieve or accomplish or whatever. It all came down to that.
Great. I'm looking forward to this. I couldn't put your book down, Tom, when I got it. I mean, I've been going through this, and I mean, the stories are truly compelling. Yeah.
I'll tell you, I couldn't, Georgia, I'd be honest with you, and, I went to therapy for like 3 years, 4 times a week, I mean, three times a week for 4 years, and I want to tell you that there was some of the stuff in this book that I couldn't even read. There's one confession by a guy named Ross Dadrada, who, it was written out in handwriting, and so we couldn't edit it. But I had to read it all, and it was about his killing kids and so forth. And I just really couldn't get through that. And in fact, one of the cops who interviewed this guy up in Washington State, Calmus, he has to be excused during the interview with this guy, and went in and got sick in the bathroom. Is a hardened.
Used to everything, these guys,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's right. Some of the, I do want to warn people that, I don't even go near the book if you...
If you're queasy,
you're
a kid, if your kid's going to pick it up on your coffee table, be very careful.
It's the roughest, I think it's one of the roughest books ever written because it's not by Tom Philbin, it's by these killers.
It's by them. It's real stuff.
It's iMonster, serial killers in their own chilling words. And, we have stuff from Edmund Kemper, who killed co-eds on the coast, and we have all kinds of stuff. And it's in there. It's like many of the things come from police reports, and the cops have a way. See, if a serial killer writes something, his own confession or something, it can be a lot of baloney, And like H.H. Holmes, this guy who killed a lot of people at the turn of the century, killed like 100, over 100 people, and you read this confession of his, and that's in here too, and it's so tepid, so toned down, but not when cops get the interview.
Tommy, do television shows like Dexter glorify a serial killer?
I think so, absolutely. I mean, I don't even watch that. I thought that was I just couldn't grasp that concept, that is here. I mean, serial killers have actually I'm not sure I know exactly what Dex is about. I know he's a serial killer, and I know
he's a forensic blood splatter expert for a police department.
Okay.
And but at the same time, what he kills real criminals. I mean, he doesn't go after good people. I mean, he goes after
that's totally unrealistic, because a real serial killer would not do that.
No, he can't stop.
No, couldn't stop.
Can't stop.
You know, Ted Bundy, you know, Mr. Ted Bundy, one of our most famous serial killers, actually helped or tried to help cops capture the Green River Killer. He had Bob Keppel,
that's right,
a detective, go down to Florida and talk to him and try and get. And they never really got much out of him. But he was the guy who tried to get involved in that. But they thought in the end that he just was, you know, could get better treatment and so on and so forth from the authorities by talking to these guys and also delay his own execution, you know.
Wasn't a little bit of Ted Bundy in the character that Anthony Hopkins played in Silence of the Lambs, where he tried to help find another serial killer?
Absolutely, yeah. True. Sure. Yeah, Thomas Harris went down to the author of that book that the movie was based on. He went down to the FBI's serial killer unit down there in Quantico, and he got all his information from them. And, you know, all we ghouls got our information from the FBI, you know. And he said it was, he got other stuff. Like, for example, Bundy once in mid-career in the 70s, he killed for about 5 or 6 years in a row between 70s and 80s.
And speak up a little bit, Tommy.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Yeah, well, I'm not holding this phone close to my
Put that puppy right by your mouth.
There you go.
All right.
Boy, you got away with words, George.
I do.
Anyway, you know, Bundy went to Sanasich Park, and I'm brutally mispronouncing it, but in one day he captured two girls and, you know, killed them, murdered them. But the way he did it was he made believe that he had a sling on his arm, and he says, I can't manage this skateboard or surfboard or whatever it was, and he lured the girls into helping him, and then he captured them and he immobilized them, and then that was it. But he did two in one day.
A sick genius.
Oh yeah, it was. You know, when he was sentenced to death, I love the line of the judge. Who sentenced him to death? He says, you could have been a good lawyer. He says, I would love to have seen you practice here in front of me. He says, but partner, you went down the wrong road. You know,
yeah.
And he was a very bright guy, and of course, he was very dangerous, because the package that he was in was he was a very handsome guy, smart, witty, and so forth. And you could never dream that he had all this monstrosity inside him. And you can't really tell, of course, who's a serial killer and who isn't from the outside. You can tell when people have problems when they're kids. You can spot a serial killer in the making there, you know.
Yeah, and science is going to hone in on that, I think, even better. Let me ask you really quickly, Tom, about Sirhan, not a serial killer.
Right.
But the mind of someone like that, how could he, and I'm beginning to believe that there might have been a couple gunmen involved there in the RFK
killing. No kidding, wow.
Yeah, they've got... You know, there was I'm going to try to get the audio forensic expert on, who claims that he heard 13 shots with new audio equipment. In those days, 40 years ago, they couldn't do anything. But he said in the gun that Sirhan had, the clip only could carry 8 cartridges. They heard 13. Somebody else was there. And a lot of people claim that the Sirhan's bullet didn't hit Kennedy in the head. So we'll find out. But how could a guy say, he said this today, he's up for parole on Wednesday, I can't remember what happened? How could that be just blocked out of his brain?
Well, his brain is not like yours and mine, George. I mean, these guys are, they're pure sociopaths. They don't care about anybody but themselves, and they're just, it's all about them. I mean, you see it over and over and over again in their behavior. And Sirhan, he could probably, it sounds outlandish and like he's trying to get parole, but I could believe that, you know. But a guy like him, he's extraordinarily dangerous. They all are. I mean, even though he's not a serial killer, people like who can perform acts like that are horrific, and you really don't want to let them out on the street.
Or the Mansons.
Oh, the Charlie Manson. Yeah, he's.
Charlie wasn't there. Charlie did not commit the murders. He just convinced his little group to go out and do it.
Right. I thought with Manson, I was trying to figure him out. And my understanding of all this stuff, by the way, came from my own therapy and learning things from really good doctors and things, I was trying to figure out Charlie Manson. I thought his group, ultimately his group was like a group of young prostitutes. In other words, just like his mother. His mother was 14 years old, and she was walking the streets of Chicago or something,
Yeah.
And she was a prostitute. And, I thought he was trying to control... it all goes back to the unconscious, in my view, and he was trying to just turn them into prostitutes and kind of control his mother, in a sense.
Well, and what's so amazing, Tom, the effect that this has on you when you're a child. Every serial killer I was reading in your book, something happened to them when they were kids.
Absolutely.
Some event, some series of events caused them to do the whacked out things they did. It's amazing what you can do to a little mind. Now, maybe somewhere in the brain, there's got to be a defect somewhere. I don't know that yet. But surely when you're a kid, and if these bizarre things occur to you, it's going to affect you as you're an adult.
Oh, absolutely. But I understand that quite well, that I was going to try to do a book called The Past is Always Present, and it really is true. And I understand this myself, but when I was a kid growing up, I didn't like redheaded women, and I said, geez, I just stayed away from dating them and so on and so forth, and of course I realized my mother had red hair. I mean, it sounds, they're gone now.
I like them red, brunettes, blondes, you name it.
Oh, I like them too, but not today. But you're absolutely right about there are everything, in my view, the thing that motivates these killers happens in their childhood. And I'm not going to get into all the gory details, but you take a guy like Lucas. He was born, and believe it or not, and raised in
Henry Lee Lucas.
Yeah, Henry Lee Lucas. He was raised in Blacksburg, Virginia, the same place, by the way, a town where or city where that Asian kid went wacko in a mass murder at the school. Remember that?
Yeah.
But his mother was a prostitute, and she used to not. He came from a kind of a culture. He was really down and out kind of culture. But they said even based on that, he was worse. And he dressed them like a little girl, so never bathed them and all that kind of stuff. She was of course a prostitute, and he knew that. And she treated him like a dog more than. But I mean, all these people. It's hard to describe exactly the degree of depravity and abuse. It's not like our parents spanking us or something, or,
this is almost torture.
This is almost torture. It is torture.
Yeah.
I would say that it is. Once she asked him, what do you like on the farm, Henry Lee? And he says, I like the mule. So she shot the mule,
Yeah.
They were talking about people who were off their rockers, and the kids then.
And she probably shot the mule right in front of him.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That we're talking about people who the killers who become terrified of people like Viola Lucas. They get terrified of her, and then what they do is they push all this terror. What would you do if you had a mother like that? You you'll be worried about yourself, that she might come along and...
Oh, yeah. Thank God I never had to worry about that.
No.
My God.
So, so what they do is they take... This is my theory, and I think it's more than a theory, really, because I've seen it is the common denominator in a lot of these killers. They take this terror, and the way they deal with it is they push it down into their unconscious. They're not aware of the details of her, of what's going on with the, you know, they just push it away, but the feelings remain, the anxiety remains, the
yes.
terror remains, and then
the lashing out remains.
That's right, the anger remains, and then what they do as they grow up, they try to get into a position where they're in control, they have power, so they have. They work their way through various porno stuff and fantasies and everything else, and then eventually they when they're 20, usually that's a normal time. They start killing people, you know. But it's all an attempt to suppress their terror of this maternal figure or sometimes the father figure. Like take for example, we're talking about hair, red hair, and all before Ted Bundy. I have a picture in one of my books, Ted Bundy, of four of his victims, and they all have brown hair parted in the middle. And guess who had brown hair parted in the middle? You know, his mother.
Exactly.
And so yeah. this, so it's all, to me, it's all, they're projecting, they're killing the thing that they're most afraid of, and it's not, they're killing symbols of the thing they're most afraid of. It's not the person that they actually kill. She's a symbol of what they were terrified of.
And this comes, you know, when we come back from the break, Tom, I want to talk about how many serial killers, active serial killers, there could be out there right now. But, I mean, they're coming from all walks of life these days. Truck stop serial killers, all kinds. You know, originally I thought that it never skewed race. It's done that. Women are serial killers now as well.
Right.
It is truly unbelievable. The FBI, I guess they're responsible for chasing these people down, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. They have the resources. They have what they call profilers, you know, and you know, to try and figure out who did the killing and so forth. They have vast resources, and like for example, up in Long Island where I live, they found four bodies and females. Prostitutes, by the way, that's a favorite, target of serial killers or prostitutes. They took that finally and they gave it to the FBI. One of the problems, by the way, with law enforcement is that there's a lot of ego involved, you know, and sometimes various units won't share the information they have. And serial killers give to the FBI and they'll help you, you know. But my police department up here, they didn't accept the profiler from the FBI, which was not the way to catch a serial killer, you know.
No, not at all. Stay with us, Tom. We're going to take this quick break. Tom Philbin, our special guest tonight, his book, I, Monster. And as he said, it's not for those who are faint at heart by any means. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. Just fire away, send it right there. And by the way, again, thanks for supporting Children International, by the way. Just five more sponsorships tonight. That's it. And we have reached goal number one of three. So just go to coasttocoastam.com for that. And of course, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. Mike in Livermore, over the weekend, I had that event by Skype in San Leandro. I was in L.A., and they beamed me aboard a 40-foot screen, but he did a little fundraiser for Children International, and we'll tell you about that sometime this week. It was very successful. I'll be back in a moment with Tom Philbin as we talk about iMonster on Coast to Coast AM. And our special guest tonight is Tom Philbin as we talk about his work, iMonster, The Life of Serial Killers here, and we'll be back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Tom, how many serial killers running around North America right now? What do you think? What's the estimate?
Well, the FBI estimates about 70. 70. They're very difficult to catch, though, of course, because they cross state lines. You know, now they have, the FBI has a thing called VICAP. They've had it for a while.
What's that?
Violent Apprehension Program, where they send all kinds of detailed questionnaires to police departments and on killings that sound like maybe there might be serial killing involved. And then they fill all of the things out, all these forms out, send them into the FBI, and then the FBI puts all this information together and tries to see if there's a pattern there, you know, that there's somebody's killing a certain profile of a victim, a prostitute, something like that, and then they can start to pursue them from that, you know, pursue, give them feedback information for them, you know. But in the past, years ago, until a guy out in Los Angeles named Pierce Brooks got involved, years ago, they had no way to know if one, you know, somebody got killed in, say, Los Angeles, you know, that it was related to, say, Santa Ana or Santa Cruz or, you know, some other town like that. So now today, they do it. They have much, much more ability to study what the similarities are, you know, so that then they can start tracking somebody.
All right, now let's get your take. What is a serial killer? At the start of our discussion, I had a little definition. Is right. That accurate?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think there are, by the way, they're kind of, it's hard sometimes to define it exactly, but they say, you know, it's at least three killings. The FBI says it's at least three murders with a cooling off period of a few days between murders, and that's just about it, you know. That's my definition of them, you know. But you can there are ways to kind of recognize the work of a serial killer. You know, they'll put bodies in the same place. And
do they want to be caught, Tom?
Oh, that's a great question, George. Really, yeah, absolutely true. For example, yeah. I have many examples, but one of them is Ted Bundy. Bundy, when he was, he is killing people in, you know, in Oregon and Washington and all over the place. And he was captured, arrested, and he's put in a kind of a rinky-dink jail in Silver Springs, Colorado. And they asked, and he asked his lawyer one day, he said, hey, who still has the death penalty? Where is it really active now, you know? And the lawyer thought, he said, well, Georgia. He said, no, not Georgia, no, Florida. So then...
So he goes down there.
Yeah, but what he did for he got himself very skinny. He got out of the rinky dink, and he got out. He went all the way down there. Then what he did was he invaded a girl's sorority, killed a couple of girls on the head with a club, and then he... also kidnapped a 12-year-old girl, killed her. And then he drove around Pensacola with his bug. He always had a bug. That's what he drove, a yellow bug. And one night, excuse me, he was parked in an alleyway between two closed, a restaurant and another store that were closed. And a cop, you know, went by and saw him and said, wonder what this guy's doing here. So he started to drive up. And Bundy, instead of trying to talk his way out or something like that, took off, drove away very fast. The cop pursued him, and they checked him out. And ultimately, they found out it was Ted Bundy. And ultimately, as Stephen King said, he rode the lightning. Because if you want to, if you want to get executed, go and kill somebody in Florida. You know, I had an FBI guy tell me, he says, he was a very dry sense of humor. He says, what's the leading cause of death in Florida? I says, I don't know. He says, the electric chair, you know.
Jeez.
And so he wanted to get a court. Now, you know, there's a very interesting thing, I think. You remember Timothy McVeigh? Does that ring a bell to you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Oklahoma City, sure.
Now, he set a bomb off in front of the Murrah Building, killing all these people. And then he drove this rattle trap of a car out of town, out of Oklahoma City. And he was, then he got on the highway. Everything, that's fine, except that he had no license plate. And of course, he was spotted by a cop. And the cop stopped him and they took him in. And ultimately, they found out that he was the perp behind the explosion, you know. So, yeah, but you see that all the time, you know, I'm thinking of some of the people that there's Bundy Dahmer, Wesley Dodd, Alex Fish. I'm trying to think. There was a couple of other people who did the same thing. Robert Hansen, a killer in Anchorage. He kept his charms or his tokens that he took off his victims in his house, in a very obvious place that would have been very easy.
Yeah, easy evidence.
Yeah, easy evidence if the cops came to see, this is a guy who's doing it. But they a lot of them do it. And I'm trying to fish.
Well, while you're doing that, let me ask you a question. Remember Richard Speck, the mass murderer?
Oh, I hated that guy.
All right. So he kills 8 nurses in 1966.
Right.
Mass murder, he does it all in one time. What's the difference between that and a serial killer? I mean, had he not been caught, would he have done this over and over and over again?
No,
Serial killers just kill one person at a time, right?
Yeah, no, I don't think Speck would have done that. He just was, it was a crime of opportunity. And he was, you know, you try to understand people in life and what makes them go, but he's one guy I couldn't really relate to at all. And
he's dead now, thank God.
And he's caught, yeah, he's dead. I remember calling up Joey at prison out there, and I said, I was doing a book, and I said, well, what's the status respect to one of the officers there? And he says, well, he's in here, and he says he's going to be in here a while. I says, well, when will he get out? He says, well, with good behavior in 2098, you know. I mean, he and he turned into a, he had injections in his chest and all that kind of stuff. He was a whack job. But if you look at his background, you see that he was abused when he was a kid by
his mother, right?
By his mother, yeah. And yeah. Mostly mothers, you know. I was just thinking, my mind went blank before, which is, you know, a malady as you get older. And I was thinking, like, David Parker Ray, who Vernon Gebeth, who was one of the top, maybe the top homicide investigator, in my view, in America. He's been to 8,000 death investigations. He thought that Ray was is the worst serial killer he ever came across. Ray was abused, of course, when he was a kid. He was, you know, what happens to these guys? They get discarded by the mother. And then there's just this other things that can happen, like the profound cruelty. But the message is beamed home that you're not worth anything, that you're a piece of garbage, you belong in the garbage pail, and that maybe one day we'll put them in there, we'll put you in there. And this is stuff percolates in their unconscious all the time. And, you know, Dennis Rader, you know, the BTK killer.
Right, the one who tricked his family, right?
Yeah.
Even his family was baffled by that one, weren't they?
Yeah, well, he was a high ranking official in, I think, of the Methodist Church in Topeka there. And he, listen to this, he's not a dumb guy. He sends the cops, the local Topeka cops, a note, and he says, I would be willing to communicate with you on the computer, but if I do, you would have to promise me not to use anything on the computer computer material that to track who I am and where I am. You know?
Huh.
And they sent a message back to him. Oh, no problem.
Yeah.
No problem.
They couldn't wait.
No, they could wait, and that's how they caught him. He was caught that way. You know, they sent something. They identified that their computer experts come in, and that was it. You know, and. I'm just trying to think now. John Wayne Gacy, he had his burial plot for his victims
under his house.
Under his house, yeah. And that's right, in a crawl space. And You know, this is not exactly smelling like tulips in the spring, you know. And he had people coming in the house wondering what the smell was. And when finally he committed some infraction or something, and the cops came to his house, and of course one of the cops recognized the smell immediately, you know, as deceased people, you know, and then they got him, you know. But you said, they all set up, most of them that I've come across, they all set up, most of them set up ways to lead the cops to them, you know. And why is the question, is it guilt, deep down guilt? And that's the only thing I can figure.
You know, I was looking for a couple others that weren't in here, like Ed Gein and Albert DeSalvo, the Boston Strangler.
Oh, yeah, sure.
They go on and on forever. I mean, how many books of serial killers could you write? It's endless, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Well, Ed Gein was, you know, he was, by the way, he was the...
He was a pig farmer, wasn't he?
That's right. I was Wisconsin, yeah. And he... Well, I'm not going to go into this all this stuff, but he used the materials from he was a grave robber, you know. And anyway, but
he would cut off their noses and wear them and everything. He was whacked out.
Yeah, and their chests and everything. But he was a guy who was the fictional. He was a real life guy who was that Hitchcock based was it Robert Bloch based his novel Psycho on.
Oh, really? Was it Gein?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It was Gein, yeah. And he didn't actually. They said he only killed a few people, you know. But he spent his whole life then in a mental institution, Mendota, I think it was, out there in Wisconsin.
Is he dead now?
Oh yeah, sure, he's dead. Okay. He lived a long life though. You know, he lived a pretty long life. And DeSalvo. Now they bring up. Maybe DeSalvo wasn't the killer.
Tony Curtis played him in a movie, didn't he?
He did a great job.
Yeah, he did.
He did a terrific job. Yeah, Tony Curtis played him. And he ultimately was murdered in prison himself, you know. But they asked...
As Jeffrey Dahmer was, too, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. They said that they asked Bailey, F. Lee Bailey, his lawyer, who was a great lawyer, you know. And they asked him, you know... whether he thought he was the killer, you know, he laughed. He said, of course he is, you know.
Yeah.
But they had a theory there that he wasn't, you know. But they didn't have hard evidence. Like you're talking with Sirhan, with bullets, and that, I mean, that's a whole different. They had no evidence. It's just theory. You know?
Well, with all these serial killers, I mean, how long is their longest, efforts before they finally get caught?
That's a
years?
Question. Yeah, it's years. You know, the thing that puzzles me, and contrary to popular belief, I don't know everything, you know, but the thing that puzzles me, George, is that why sometimes they go off the scene for years, like the BTK killer.
And then they pop back in again.
They pop back in. He was out of the game for like 10 years, you know?
Do they actually try to stop on purpose?
I don't think so. No, they can't stop.
Or they do it because they're afraid they're going to get caught, you know?
I just don't know the answer. I don't know the answer to that. I can't see any evidence. I can't see anything that satisfies me, that gives me a satisfactory answer as to why they would stop, because it's such a, I mean, the thing that puzzles me is that it's such a compelling, driving emotion.
It's an urge to kill.
It's an urge to kill, exactly. And, I mean, what do you do with that? Just put it away? Say, yeah, okay, I'll come back in about 10 years.
Yeah, you know? No, that's weird how they stop like that. Some of them, not all of them.
Not all of them. Oh, no. No, it's not all of them. They're... I mean, they say that Henry Lee Lucas killed 300 people, you know, and I don't believe that. You know what I think he was doing? There was a big controversy down in Texas about this, but I think what he was doing was he was confessing
to everything,
because he wanted to get away from, the prison, and just they would take him up to a town and they would, say, where was the body? Blah 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 blah, and you know, he would get away and kind of be out there, you know, standing in a wheat field or a cornfield or something, rather than back on Houston's death row. You know? Oh, I just remembered something. This is Ron Rosenbaum. He's a very good writer. He wrote for Vanity Fair. I think he still does. But he interviewed Lucas in Houston, the death house, and he said he had a glass eye. He said that was a warm one, you know. But President Bush played a role in Lucas's life, which was very unusual.
How so?
Well, he was the governor of Texas at the time when Lucas was up for going to the chair, and Bush commuted his death sentence because he said he had been wrongly convicted of one of his murders, you know, and that's what he did. I know that, you know, that whole administration was very pro-death penalty, you know.
Where's that wacko of the Jordan Vandersloot? Remember the one that involved in the Natalie Holloway case?
I think he might be a serial killer also. Yeah, because there's other questions of him, like he had this girl in Holland, you know, and she disappeared, and then this girl in Aruba, you know, and I interviewed a guy who I believe is a serial killer, you know, and in Attica. And
was it uncomfortable for you to sit there with him?
I tell you, he was a big guy. You know,
I mean, did you think, you know, at any moment this guy's going to leap across the desk at me or something?
No, because I knew that he looked at me. He thought I was going to investigate his case and you know, give him a trip out the door. And I wasn't about to do that because...
Heck no.
No, you know, but he was... I definitely cannot say on the air the way he killed his victims, but he killed one, he almost killed another, and with his bare hands, he was just like there was, it's so savage that you say there's something else going on here besides mere murder. Like, for example, a regular murder you might say is a family murder, and there's always, the cops always start looking at people from the inside out, you know, their family and all that, you know, and there's murder in a bar or whatever, you know, you have all kinds of things, but the method of murder here was so horrendous that, you know, I knew that something else was going on, and I investigated him, and I got a hold of his ex-wife, who had put him in jail, by the way, for a murder, this one murder he had committed, and I talked to her, and I says, am I right about this guy, you know, and she says, you know, look at his army records, she says, in Germany, and go over there and take a look and see what he was suspected of when he was, you know, you can kind of tell by the method, if the method is horrendous, then take a second look.
Were there unsolved murders in Germany when he was there?
She told me that. I never confirmed that myself, but she told me that there were.
All right. Well, stay with us, Tom. We're at the top of the hour. We'll be right back with you on Coast to Coast AM. Tom Philbin, iMonster.